live on tape, Work in Progress, a World at Work podcast about work, life, and everything in between. With award-winning radio host Tom Alexander and Workspan's Not Safe for Work columnist Charles Epstein. Here are your hosts, Tom and Charles.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Work in Progress. My name is Tom Alexander. And of course, as always, I am joined by my podcast partner and good friend. It is Charles Epstein. Hey, Charles.
Hey, Tom. I thought in the previous podcast, we were going to swap out it for he.
Make it a little bit more
human and personal. Thank you very much.
Just trying to be consistent. Yeah, we're going to. You know, I need some time to let that you know, just work itself into my DNA. I got to get that. It'll take an episode or two. He is Charles Epstein.
Yes. Well, you'll remember we in that interview, if I'm not mistaken, with the CEO of Virgin Pulse, we were talking about changing bad habits or swapping good habits for bad habits. So, yes. And we discussed how habits are not only hard to break and good ones are hard to maintain. So we all understand the challenge, the struggle, Tom. So doesn't happen overnight.
No, it does not.
But once you change, I think you're going to be a better man. I'm probably going to be a better man. This is going to be a markedly better podcast, if that's to be imagined.
This is not good. This boy needs discipline. Radio. It's all right once in a while. Otherwise, it tends to induce bad values, false dreams, lazy habits.
Right.
Anyway, but before we go any further down that particular rabbit hole, we'll have to take that offline. Today, Tom, we're going to be speaking with Adam Zuckerman, who leads Willis Towers Watson's employee engagement software global product team. Easy for me to say, whose goal is to help companies improve performance by enhancing the employee experience. And Adam will be joining us from Chicago, and it seems most, if not all of our guests these days, Tom, hail from northern climes, which, of course, makes us feel so superior this time of year, basking in 70-degree South Florida weather. I mean, I don't know about you, but the hardest part is trying not to gloat. But we're going to try to make this, for at least the next several weeks, work in progress, make it officially a no-gloat zone.
No gloat zone. Okay. Well, for our northern neighbors, we will share this little piece of news that as we record this next week, Charles, we are due for a deep freeze. And when I say deep freeze, about 34, 35 degrees is the projected low for South Florida. And just not too far north of that, they're going to have to cover up the orange crops and everything because frost will be quite readily apparent.
Yeah, by the way, a lot of people don't know this, but you do double duty here as the resident meteorologist. You're always up on this stuff. It's very impressive.
I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of weather and I'm a big fan of geography. It's really weird how, you know, just two things that I have a great interest in.
Yeah, I never know when you're going to be going up in that weather chopper.
Well, Charles, from here, I could see. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess next week we're going to have to knock it off with the weather stuff. But for now, it feels pretty good to do that. I'm sorry. It's a no gloat zone. So
no gloat zone. No gloat.
Let's rewind. I withdraw that comment. Yeah. Let's just move forward with Adam. Looking forward to speaking with him, Tom.
Yes. Not to be confused with the no bloat zone, you know, which something entirely different. Yes, Adam Zuckerman is next right here on Work in Progress. Stay tuned. Back in a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, weather report.
Since 2009, KangoGift has helped organizations foster cultures where employees feel valued, appreciated, and inspired to do their best every day. Their tech platform promotes meaningful relationships at work through engagement and recognition programs tailored to each client's unique culture. To learn more, visit KangoGift.com. That's KangoGift.com.
Thank you. It's beautiful, it's bittersweet. You're like a broken old toy. I take a shot of memories and black out like an empty street. I fill my days with the way you walk and fill my nights with broken dreams. I make up lies inside my head like one day you'll come back to me. Now I'm not holding on, not holding on. I'm just afraid that you're gone. Not holding on, not holding on. Beautiful mistakes.
Adam Zuckerman. Actually, Dr. Adam Zuckerman, who earned his PhD in psychology, leads Willis Towers Watson's employee engagement software global product team, which includes product owners, scrum masters, software engineers, quality assurance engineers, UI UX designers, architects, and database admins working across multiple scrum teams globally, with the goal of helping companies improve performance by enhancing the employee experience. Adam Zuckerman joins us today from Chicago. Hey, Adam, how are you?
I'm very good, Tom. Thanks for having me today.
Well, wonderful to have you aboard, and please say hello to my podcast partner, Charles Epstein.
Hi, Charles.
Hey, Adam. You enhance the employee experience. Tom and I would like to think that we enhance the podcast guest experience, so this should be a great podcast for the both of us.
So far, I feel very enhanced.
Excellent, excellent. Adam Zuckerman, by the way, it's a namesake of a favorite series of novels of mine, Mr. Philip Roth, just so you know. I don't know if you've ever
read it.
Okay, well, he's a University of Chicago guy. You're a Chicago guy. Your last name is Zuckerman. So all the stars are aligned. So I'm happy you're a Philip Roth fan.
Yeah.
We're getting off to a very good start, Adam.
Correct.
You know, we spent some time on your LinkedIn site in preparing for this conversation where you pose a number of provocative questions. And we thought it's a good place to start before we get into your work with Towers. Of course, these questions are related to that work. In one post, you asked, quote, "Have you ever had someone ask you for advice and the solution seems so obvious you are almost embarrassed to suggest it? They're 100% blocked by a challenge with a clear answer. Why does that happen? Because other people's problems are logical and ours are psychological," end quote. Adam, I may be misinterpreting, but it seems that you're saying that we're better able to provide advice because we can see someone else's problems more objectively and with greater detachment, whereas our own problems become complicated when we add the psychological element. Yes?
Well, yes, and. I mean, I think that's very true. Definitely true in my experience. And that's, you know, what helps when we talk a problem out and share it with someone. Often they can see it more objectively. But in that post, what I was really trying to get at was a very interesting phenomenon that I've experienced with many leaders in my consulting work, where they almost can't see the problems that the employees face. In other words, they'll look at the organization and say, well, you know, we've clarified job description. We've hired people with the right skills. Why can't everybody just get on with the work? Like, what's all the drama about? Why are there workplace challenges? Leaders sometimes literally can't see what are the challenges. And that's because they're viewing the employee experience logically, purely logically. You have goals, you have rewards, you have skills, you have a task set about doing. And the reality is that what I was trying to do in that post is sort of let leaders know and remind everyone that problems aren't logical, that when we experience problems, they're psychological. And so part of what employees are dealing with is the anxiety and the fear and feeling overwhelmed and feeling frustrated and resentful. You know, all of the things that happen in our real lives happen in our work. And to really understand the employee experience, we can't just come at it logically. We have to come at it psychologically. And so that's in that post, I was saying sometimes to leaders, I think a lot of that is invisible because they're not dealing with their own problems. They're thinking about other people's problems.
Yeah. Okay. Now it makes a lot of sense. You end that post by saying, or by advising people to be more Kirk and less Spock. Now I understand completely what you're getting
exactly,
at.
Exactly. I think lots of times, I mean, some of the best leaders in the world, they come at it as Kirk, and that's tremendously valuable and useful. But sometimes what I think is needed is more Kirk and less
Bones. Yeah, and certainly a lot less Bones.
That's right. And that it's interesting because that post got a really big reaction. So I don't know if it was it may have been, you know, misunderstood. It may not have been written clearly, but it did get a lot of people talking about that issue because I think that distinction is real to people.
Yeah. No, you clarified and I think put me in the camp of a misunderstanding, but you probably also got a lot of Spockies. Excuse me, a lot of Trekkies.
That's right.
In one of your posts, you say that you hate feedback. Quote, feedback hurts. Feedback means I have to try again. I wasn't right and I have to change. I think if you love feedback, you're doing it wrong, close quote. I hear you. I hate feedback, too, unless, of course, we're talking Jimi Hendrix overloading his Marshall amp during a live performance of Purple Haze. obviously, managers need to communicate, sometimes critically, to their employees. If feedback is such a bad thing, what then is the alternative?
Yeah, it's a great question, and this one is interesting. I mean, I meant to be provocative, of course, and push the boundaries a little bit. I mean, my view there is, you know, it's like working out, and I hate working out, but it's good for me, and I like the benefits of it, and so I do it, and I guess in that post, and generally, my point is that is to sort of, you know, recognize that it's not supposed to be fun and it should hurt a little bit and that's okay. You know, that's what it means to grow and that's what it means to learn. And so leaders and employees, people who are giving feedback and getting feedback should recognize that and they don't have to like it. And I think if they like it too much, maybe they are doing it wrong because it can be a painful thing, but growth can be painful. But that's, you know, that's, just sort of meant to be a recognition of the reality of what feedback is like.
You know, I think we had somebody on the pod who did not like using the very word feedback because, according to the guest, it put the person sort of in a defensive crouch and, you know, automatically sort of skewed the conversation and puts it sort of in an adversarial way. Any thoughts on that?
You know, I don't mind it. What I do mind, and I think I was trying to provoke a little bit in my words, was that what I don't like or candidly understand is people who sort of are able to smile through it, you know, in other words, who just seem to relish, I think it's the healthiest thing in the world to say, oh, you know, this is really unfortunate. This is frustrating, but that's how we learn. You know, they call it growing pains. I mean, to me, that's very real. That resonates with me. Yeah, if it's too comfortable and if I'm really enjoying it, then I'm probably not getting – I'm probably not – it's not clicking for me in the way that it should so that I can grow. That's my experience of it. And I think it's others as well, which is that there's a
– Yeah, so – right. So what I'm hearing from you, Adam, is no masochists need apply here.
Well, sort of – look, it's like no pain, no gain. Right. It's like, okay. So, you know, that pain should, you know, you should feel that. And that's when, that's when it's working.
Adam, you ask why companies survey their employees, but don't act on the results. I gather this happens with some frequency, which begs the question, why do companies survey their employees and don't do anything with the results?
Yeah, it does happen. And it's rare, thankfully, but it does happen. And I still hear horror stories about it. Does so much damage and it undermines trust tremendously and takes a long time to recover from. It's hard to know why exactly. As I said before, it's, you know, having survey results is like, it's like having a treasure map. I mean, literally, if you know how to read them, you've got the answer. You know what to work on to improve the employee experience and improve the business. Why don't companies jump on that? It's like sitting on a winning lottery ticket. And, it's hard to know. I think there's a lot of different reasons. I think one of them is that companies sometimes feel that they don't want to even share the results with employees because they don't want to sort of acknowledge and recognize how bad things are and communicate that to employees. But the reality is employees already know how bad things are. They completed the survey. They provided the results. So that's just sort of a foolish mistake. But I do think some companies fall into that trap, which is why they don't even share the results, much less act on them, unfortunately.
No, it's interesting. I mean, I can understand why they may be reluctant to share them, but surely these results can be useful, illuminating, even if they're not shared, you know, among your management group or whatever. You know, this is valuable information. As you say, it's a treasure map. Very surprising.
Absolutely. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, the priorities get in the way. It's short-sighted, but it happens. It's really unfortunate when it does. I think sometimes companies just don't know what to do. They're just not sure what to do about some of these challenges that are raised. And that's really, I think, candidly, just laziness. I mean, you know, oftentimes there are open-ended comments as part of an employee survey that can be really revealing in terms of possible solutions. You know, you can run focus groups. There's all kinds of things you can do. You should never be stymied by not. And just defining the problem, which the survey results help you do if analyzed properly, is, you know, 90% of the work. So it's really unfortunate when companies fall into this trap. The other possibility, of course, is that they did the survey for sort of cosmetic reasons and they were never intending to take action to begin with. And I think that's very rare, thankfully. But have to recognize that that may also be a possibility. But in my opinion, it's better not to do a survey at all. In that circumstance, than to do one and not be prepared to act.
Yeah, reminds me, there was a radio host Tom and I actually were fond of back in the day, and his tagline at the end of the show was, "Your influence counts, use it." I guess the version here would be, "Your influence counts, and we really don't care. We're not going to use it, regardless what you have to say."
The irony, of course, is that you know I think what the other factor I think that happens is sometimes leaders get overwhelmed with the amount of feedback, which may be poor design or improper analysis, but the reality is less is more in terms of acting on employee feedback, in my experience. In other words, some of the most successful change initiatives I've ever seen were just one or two bold actions as a result of employee survey results. You know, there's dozens of things you could focus on, but to just focus on just one or two that are important to the business and meaningful, will have an impact you believe in, can make all the difference in the world. So acting on survey results does not mean you have to go down a long list and address all these issues that have been raised. Employees know that's frankly unrealistic. They just want to see something. Often less is more.
Right, right. Hmm. Tell us how you feel. Really? No, not really.
Our guest is Dr. Adam Zuckerman. He leads Willis Towers Watson's Employee Engagement Software Global Product Team. You state that leaders who get results by being a jerk misunderstand the job. The job is not to get results. The job is to get results while being kind, is a quote attributed to you. Over the past couple of years, we've heard more people speak about compassionate leadership. How would you describe compassionate leadership? What are the defining characteristics?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know that I have a ready definition. I guess to some extent, you know it when you see it. But I would emphasize, you know, there's a lot of sort of niceties, obviously, that are just basic human decency, treating people well, being thoughtful, being respectful, mindful of their experiences and how they want to be referred to, being inclusive, right? But to me, those are sort of table stakes. For any civil human interaction today. I think in the workplace, from a leadership perspective, it goes further than that. To me, the key is acting in a way that furthers the growth of those you lead. To me, that's one of the kindest things you can do, is to help people grow and to act in a way that creates an environment in which they can grow and thrive. That to me is a fundamental responsibility that leaders have with regard to their reports. And that can be anything from the mundane, you know, putting them in stretch assignments and promoting them and giving them new opportunities, to the more abstract, encouraging them, coaching them. But I think underneath all that, really, as you unpack it, is believing in them. Belief is an incredibly powerful thing. believing in oneself and believing in others. And I think that the best was, I think the greatest leaders I've ever had believed in me more than I did, and was tremendously kind, tremendously kind results, because it helped me grow. And that's how I remember them fondly because of that. So I think that's a critical part of it. And I think if you don't have people that you believe in, you got to get different people, or you got to put them in roles where you can believe in them. Because to me, that's the foundation.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We had somebody on a couple of weeks ago, Greg Slamowitz, who wrote a book, Flipping the Pyramid. And one of the things he says that what leaders need to avoid is micromanagement, which is the complete opposite of what you're talking about, which is the complete opposite of having confidence and empowering employees to go and do their best work.
Correct.
Yeah.
Completely agree. Yeah. When you micromanage them, they turn off their brains.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whenever you stop, then they don't do anything. And you say, well, what happened? Well, come, you're not stepping up.
Right.
It's a really bad cycle.
Oh yeah. If you're going to treat me like a robot, I'm going to behave exactly like a robot.
Right. Exactly.
You know, you refer to highly paid professional basketball players who start missing easy open shots when they need them most, because they need them most. The pressure starts affecting their ability to execute what they could otherwise do in their sleep. You mentioned the right amount of pressure makes diamonds. Too much pressure explodes. But the question is, how do you know when you're applying the right amount of pressure?
Right. Well, I mean, you don't really, right? I mean, you can't. But I think the trick is to stay open to the reality that you need to continually be calibrating the amount of pressure across different circumstances and different people. You know, because you hear pressure makes diamonds, and I think it's a fun saying, and there's some truth in it. But I think it can be overused. And we do have to be careful, because, yeah, the right pressure can make diamonds. But as I said, I mean, you know, there's a lot of studies on this, and it's been well documented. Enough pressure elevates performance; too much erodes it. And there is a sweet spot, and so it's, you never know for sure. But it's being open to calibrating it as you work with different employees in different settings.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like they say with performers, flop sweat is a good thing. It primes you for a performance. If you don't have it, you don't have that adrenaline that really gives you the focus that you need often to get in front of an audience and do your thing at a high level.
Mark McGraw is the managing editor of Workspan and #Evolve. And he recently interviewed you for an article on stay interviews. First, for our listeners who are unfamiliar with the term, including me, what is a stay interview, and what's your take on them?
Right. So a stay interview is very popular now with the Great Resignation. People are focused on turnover and attrition in a way they haven't in a very long time. The idea of a stay interview is sitting down with employees and talking. It's sort of the opposite of an exit interview, talking to them before they leave, hopefully well before, thinking about leaving. And asking them why they stay, rather than having to wait until they leave and ask them why they're leaving. Talk to them about what they like about the organization, what they're looking forward to, what are the opportunities for growth that are most important to them, how you can improve their experience, and doing this in a qualitative and thoughtful and disciplined way. So that's what a stay interview. I'm not a huge fan. I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with that idea. It's a fine idea. But I think that it's, especially now, it smacks a little bit of desperation I think the risk is it turns into kind of like, you know, oh my God, there's people leaving. How can I keep you before you walk out the door? It's like cramming for a test. It's sort of too little, too late. In other words, you know, the best companies in the world, in my view, are listening to employees continuously. And they've developed a strategy and a process for doing that using a variety of different tools throughout the year. And they're listening at key milestones. They're listening when people get promoted, or, you know, when they get onboarded to begin with, when they get trained, when they get promoted, maybe when they go on leave or when they come back. The information should be continuously flowing. And that's not easy, but it's necessary. And to do a stay interview, feels like you're kind of, you know, we're losing people fast. Let's hurry up and talk to them, see if we can keep them from leaving, which, you know, it's better than nothing, I suppose. But I would like, I think a more strategic, proactive approach makes more sense. That's continuously up.
By the way, Adam, I'll not to put too fine a point on it, but I think the opposite of a stay interview is not an exit interview. It's a go interview where you're trying to coax the person out the door. So where do you want to be in 5 years? By the way, anywhere but here, because that's not going to happen.
You mean hosting a podcast?
well, just gently, diplomatically saying, hey, the door is open. Feel free.
I get it.
But in any case, we digress, Adam.
Well, Adam, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for taking the time today and joining us on the podcast.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it. And thanks for the great questions.
Thank you. Our guest is Dr. Adam Zuckerman, who earned his PhD in psychology. And he currently leads Willis Towers Watson's employee engagement software global product team. He spoke to us today from that toddling town, Chicago, Illinois. This is Work in Progress. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
Time to be recognized for your knowledge and confidence when navigating today's workforce challenges. World at Work's prestigious certifications reflect your readiness to make strategic decisions and implement practical solutions for a diverse workforce. Plus, achieving certifications from World at Work opens doors to career advancement, heightened marketability, and increased compensation. Find out how you can obtain World at Work certifications at worldatwork.org/certification.
Wrapping things up now on Work in Progress, along with Charles Epstein, I'm Tom Alexander. And Charles learned a lot today from Adam Zuckerman, and interesting take, and somewhat counter to some of our other guests, some of his takes on this level of management.
Yeah. You know, he had some really interesting counterintuitive takes. I know we both spent a little bit of time on his LinkedIn page, and we gleaned a lot of our questions from those posts. But let me first begin by saying it's always great to find another Philip Roth fan. I just took a flyer on that. You know, his last name, Zuckerman, of course, Philip Roth, Zuckerman novels, Zuckerman yes. Unbound. And of course, hailing from Chicago. And of course, Philip Roth there's a Chicago angle. There's a University of Chicago for a little while. So that was fun.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to continue that conversation with Adam offline. We already had a couple of little exchanges about that. So yeah, that was good. And, you know, by the way, full disclosure, well, yeah, we asked him a bunch of questions taken from his LinkedIn page, and he had really interesting answers. Some of these are pretty counterintuitive. I mean, I thought his take on feedback was particularly interesting. I also thought it was interesting talking about how leaders, there's sometimes a disconnect between leaders in the workforce where they really can't get in their shoes. They look at it in a very logical way and they really don't factor in the emotional or psychological component. So they just don't quite get maybe some of the pushback they're getting from their workers. But I should mention that in the initial exchange I had with Adam, there were a couple of questions he posed, and we forgot to bring them into the interview. One was he wanted to talk about invisible leadership, an interesting idea, again, in keeping with his somewhat counterintuitive takes on these things. And he also wanted to discuss why old school business people should like remote work. So, you know, we're going to have to bring him back to ask him those questions and obviously pick up our Philip Roth conversation, Tom.
Absolutely. We need to do a whole Philip Roth show, I think. I think that, you know.
I think so. Tom and Charles Unbound.
Yes.
Alexander's Complaint.
There's plenty of them.
Yeah. Of course, we're going to have to carefully sanitize that and no liver references or anything of that sort.
No, that's true.
But yeah, we'll have to work. We'll have to work that in.
Yeah, I only have one complaint, which began on April 12th, 1967. And it's continuing to run today.
Yes, yes. We'll have to put that under the microscope in future episodes.
Yes, absolutely. We thank Adam Zuckerman for joining us today on the program. For Charles Epstein, I'm Tom Alexander, thanking you for listening, and we'll see you next time on Work in Progress. So long, everybody.
This has been Work in Progress, a World at Work podcast about work, life, and everything in between, with award-winning radio host Tom Alexander and Workspan's Not Safe for Work columnist Charles Epstein. For more, visit worldatwork.org/work in progress. That's worldatwork.org/work in progress. Join us next week for another edition of Work in Progress.